All right, hi, it's Greg Kelly. It's late August, and the Mar-a-Lago raid, whatever, all right? It's a great big fraud, a distraction. It makes no sense what they're doing other than to get Trump. This is not serious. This is not legal. This is not ethical. This is corrupt. Actually, I guess it is pretty serious if you got the government doing all these illegal, unethical, corrupt activities, which I really believe they are. The president is being harassed. I'm surprised. Really, how can they do this with a straight face? They're, I guess, counting on everyone forgetting the Russia nonsense, impeachment number one, impeachment number two. They have whatever it is about Donald Trump. He drives them crazy. And I'll give them credit. They don't want to talk about, inflation, crime, the one-year anniversary of Afghanistan, the supply chain, non-existent border, all this stuff that they created, the woke nonsense, CRT, transgender awareness for four-year-olds. This is a losing agenda. So how do you get off it? You bring Trump back out, and Trump is uniquely not that well positioned right now to deal with this stuff. He's not running a full-time campaign or anything like that. They are harassing an innocent man once again, and I just think it's absolutely horrendous. You cannot take your eye off the ball, though, with the midterms coming up. They would like nothing more for us to have a great big debate about the Espionage Act of 1917 and all this little nitinoid nonsense about the affidavit. It's a distraction, and don't take the bait, all right? Stay focused on the need for change. We cannot keep going in this direction. It's insanity. And Joe Biden is just a combination of corrupt, incompetent, lost, feeble, compromised to go along with this, and just a lost soul. Really a lost soul. I pray for his soul, actually. You know what? I really would love it if that guy had an awakening, an epiphany, a moment. And it could happen to anybody. It could. So we'll see. We'll see. But in the meantime, to take our minds off of all that stuff, I do enjoy Instagram. I know. I delete it from time to time. Then it's back. All kinds of intriguing content. And one thing I've been looking at lately, watches. Watches, watches, watches. I love them. I grew up kind of obsessed with watches. And then I had a Casio watch. I had a some sort of analog watch. I don't remember. I think I got it in second grade. It felt so adult to wear a watch. And then in seventh grade, I got the Casio watch. And then I was into Swatch watches in high school. And then Casio G-Shock in college, primarily the Marine Corps, and a couple of little like Movados and things like that. I was intrigued by Rolex because my father had one, and then I was given one as a gift the day I graduated from flight school in 1994. I've had it ever since. And over the past couple of years, I think I've been thinking about a new watch, and Instagram picks up on that, and they start showing you all kinds of things. And something I have been so intrigued by and fascinated by is the Modfather watches, Modfather_watches. You can find that on Instagram. Incredible modifications to Seiko watches and some custom-made watches. Check it out if you can. Modfather_watches. And I started following this account along with a bunch of other watches, but this one kept on coming up. I like the, I don't know what it is. A lot of them are black and orange, and the colors appeal to me. They're very solid. Most of them seem to be modified Seiko watches, which, oh, by the way, were a big deal during Vietnam. So service members loved them. Now, my dad got a Rolex, actually. I think he was in Hong Kong during Vietnam, during like rest and relaxation for like 72 hours, went to Hong Kong, bought a Rolex. And but they were also buying these at the PX. The guy who runs the account DM'd me and said, hey, thanks for following me account. He knew my show and stuff like that, which was kind of cool. And we started talking. We started talking about watches. I may have him make me a watch. I'm still kind of savoring the process. You know, you want to make sure it's the watch for you. And anyway, it's fun. I like this stuff. And I think this guy could be someday like a major, major name in the watch world. He's on his way already. His real name is Angelo Armano. Angelo Armano. Now, this is his side job. He is also, he's in the sign business. He makes signs and for trucks and other wraps and things like that. He'll talk about it in a moment. He's a very talented guy. He's an artist, about 34 years old in New Jersey, married, two kids. Great guy, very talented, has a good head on his shoulders, very practical, but talented and kind of inspired at the same time, which you don't always find. Anyway, he's on the cusp of something really big, and I'm excited for him. And I'm excited to get a watch from him one of these days. In the meantime, here's my conversation with Angelo Armano. He is the CEO of Modfather Watches. You're in the printing and what business? What do you call it?
Sign and printing business.
Sign and how many people work with you or for you, or are you a one-man band? How does it work?
For the most part, I'm a one-man shop. I do have subcontractors for some bigger jobs. You know, I'll hire a few guys to help me or do the job. It's just easier than, you know, having payroll and having people on the payroll. But for the most part, I do most of the work myself. Mainly.
How long have you been doing it?
10 years.
And you say primarily you put decals, wrapping on vans, vehicles to kind of show off or advertise or just indicate their business, right?
Yes.
How do you get your clients?
Well, a lot of it's word of, I mean, at this stage, a lot of it's word of mouth, just doing jobs and the word getting around of me doing it. I do have a pretty good location as well. I'm located in a very industrial area of Patterson. So there's like a lot of big businesses around me, big manufacturing companies, a lot of trucking companies. So I'm just in a prime location as well.
And these things, like, what do they look like? They're big decals. You call them wrap. What does it look like? Well, how would you describe it?
Well, I guess if you could, just the way you could put it is, if you think of a roll of paper, it goes on a printer. I print, and then when it comes out, they're like sheets. And then I kind of just layer them. You know, if I'm doing a big truck, there's obviously going to be multiple sheets, and I have to overlap them because you can only print so wide. And I'm printing up to like a little over 5 feet wide. So you'll have like, I don't know, if I do, let's say, a 20-foot box truck, I'll probably have 5 sheets on each side of the box. And then I just do one sheet, do the next sheet that overlaps, and that's kind of how it goes on.
Can your, those sheets, do they resemble a paint job? Like, will you take over the entire side of a truck? Could you make a car orange if you wanted to, like the entire car?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I do that as well. So there's kind of two different types, really, of wrapping, should I say. There is, for example, printed wraps, which is mainly for advertising. Like, you'll see that on vans and trucks for companies. And yes, it almost looks like as if it's painted on, because the vinyl is laminated. After I print on it, it's laminated to protect it from UV light from the sun. And as far as changing the color of a vehicle, I can do that as well. Those are like what they call solid wraps. So let's say I have like, I don't know, a 2020 Corvette or Mustang, and I want to make it like a matte orange color. You know, there's certain colors that either can't be painted or just ridiculously expensive to paint. And then that's where I would come in and I would be doing a wrap.
And if I get my car wrapped, is that, what are the pros and cons other than cost of getting it wrapped versus painted?
Well, another thing would be the big thing is protecting the paint of your vehicle, because it is removable. So like say a front bumper, a lot of people get, you know, rock chips on their front bumper. It protects from that. And the beauty is it's not permanent. You know, if you have, let's say, a brand new car that's leased and you need to turn it back in 3 years, then you could just remove that wrap. You don't have to worry about changing the registration on the vehicle because of the color change, because it's not considered permanent. those are, I would say, the main benefits. And again, one of the benefits is just being able to get that finish that you want on a vehicle that you can't get from traditional paint.
So when you do this, by the way, do you work out of your house?
No, I have a brick and mortar spot in Patterson.
And how many, what would you say your schedule is? What do you, is it 9 to 5, 5 days a week, 6 days a week? Break it down, please.
Well, I would say 5 days a week. I very rarely work weekends anymore. I got kids now, so I got to, you know, there's things I got to do on the weekends. But not Monday through Friday, 9 to 5 would be standard, I would say. But there are times where I'm a little swamped and, you know, I'm there till like 6, 7 o'clock at night, sometimes even later. It all depends. And it goes through cycles. It's a little weird in a way, because winter, you would think, okay, that's not really the time of year to be doing this type of work. But there are times where I have so much business coming in the winter, even more so than the summer. So, you know, I have some downtime here and there. But for the most part, it's not exactly like consistent, you know, when it comes to the wrapping. I do a lot of signs as well. Like smaller signs, like for advertising, you know, lawn signs, stuff like that, real estate signs. So those kind of fill up in between when I'm doing the bigger jobs. But for the most part, you know, it's a little hard to, it's really not like, okay, I'm doing one job a day, three jobs a day. It's more or less like I could be doing 5 jobs in one day and then the next day doing nothing. You know, it's a little inconsistent in that way.
So the companies that come to you, they want like their business name on the side of a truck or whatever. Are they doing it for legal reasons? They need their trucks identified somehow? Are they doing it because, I don't know, somebody's prideful about their business and they just want to show it off? Like, what is there a legal requirement if you're a business to get your truck labeled in some way?
Yes. So, all right. So obviously the wrapping is extra. That doesn't need to happen. But legally, according to DOT, it's kind of different for certain businesses as far as like what's required on the vehicle. But for the most part, they require the name of the business, the address, the phone number, and the weight if it's over 10,000. The letters need to be a certain height, 3 inches, and that's required by DOT. So I do get a lot. I do a lot of trucks, like all the time. People call me, you know, they pick up a truck, they need to get it lettered right away because, you know, they're pulling loads sometimes across the country and they're going through many different states. So they need to have that lettering before they go on a run because they can get a ticket, and the tickets are fairly expensive depending on where you get pulled over. So yes, there is a legal requirement there. But again, that's just simple. Let me put 3-inch lettering on your doors, name of the business, address and phone number, and your license number, DOT number. But as far as the wraps go, the reason why I would say people do it is because it's like having you're driving around a billboard. And if you were to find out, like if you were to actually see how much it would cost to put an advertisement on an actual billboard, it's ridiculous. I don't know how much it is now, but I'm on a guess somewhere in the 10,000 range. And the wrap is very similar to that, and it's not stationary, and it lasts at least 7 years on the vehicle. I mean, that's what it's warranted to last for. So for X amount of money, you just bought yourself 7 years worth of advertising. And if you break it down, it's nothing compared to what you would pay just to even advertise on Google or pretty much anywhere. Yeah. I mean, it is the best bang for your buck advertising.
What about, I'm sorry, DOT, federal DOT or state DOT?
State DOT.
But DOT in New Jersey, I mean, they respect it coast to coast. I mean, it varies, but they can look it up, right? I mean, you mentioned a car going across the country or a truck going across the country. I'm surprised, actually, that they're not federal standards. But like if you get pulled over in Ohio, are they going to look up New Jersey standards? I mean, do they vary in Ohio? Sorry to get into this kind of nitty gritty detail, but what about that?
Well, I could say is this, like I don't know too much about outside of the like tri-state area, but I know that like, for example, New Jersey, I mean, sometimes it even varies from county because you know, you could drive through, let's say, Passaic County, New Jersey, and no one would care. But then once you go through Bergen County, you know, they're literally look, there's literally officers that sit there, and that's their job, is to literally look for trucks that are not lettered properly, and you will get a ticket. And same thing with New York. New York is very strict. So, and their DOT laws are slightly different than New Jersey's. And for the most part, they're trying to stay like kind of equal on that front. But for the I would say that this tri-state area, according to the laws that they have as far as requirements go for the lettering, I think that is, it pretty much translates almost as a standard throughout the country, I would say. I mean, again, I can't speak for every state. I don't
know.
No,
I get it. Yeah.
But, you know, if you have your, I mean, if you can just cover all your bases, for example, you have the name of your business, your address, your phone number, your license, your DOT, your MC, whatever numbers that are required, the weight of the vehicle, if it's over 10,000 and those letters are 3 inches, for the most part, that will cover you pretty much anywhere in the country.
You know, I always notice the address and phone number of a company, especially if they're in New York. And I'm just kind of fascinated, like, where they came from, you know, and like a lot of times the trucks are not from New York City and it's some street in Hicksville or Passaic or something like that. And it just, I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to follow up with them or anything like that, but you just think about where the truck came from. And that's you, by the way. Those are the that's the kind of stuff you do, right? Those things,
yes,
that get me daydreaming. It's just amazing how many jobs there are and how many, you know what I mean? Like that there would be somebody like you who would do that. And there's a whole art to it. I think it's pretty cool. Do you like it?
Yes. I love doing it. I mean, there's certain things that I love to do a little bit more than other things as far as the work I do. But yeah, I enjoy it. I mean, it's great working for yourself, to be honest with you. Coming from someone who has worked for people, working for being your own boss and working for yourself. I mean, it's just, there's nothing that can compare to it. And yeah, I love it. I love having the business. I love being there. My neighbors are really great. It's almost like family, sort of like a family oriented, like all of the people in the garage is going down. We all know each other. I love it. It's great.
What about like the red tape and all the stuff that you have to deal with as a small business owner? I'd imagine there's a lot of it. I mean, registering and licensing and all the stuff that you have to do to stay in business. How is that a factor? Is it tough? Am I overstating it? What's the deal?
Well, I guess for me, I think if you were to compare me to, let's say, some giant trucking company or a garbage disposal company or some of the companies that I do trucks for, I mean, they have a lot more red tape, but me, I'm a simple LLC. I have to just pay for an annual report every year through the federal government. I have to report, obviously, any taxes that I collected. It's fairly easy on my end. I mean, mainly because if I hire someone to do a job, then it's a 1099. So there's no W-2, W-4s or anything like that. There's no payroll tax. And my accountant is really good. So she does all my books. She does everything. And it's fairly easy. And for me, I'm not going to speak for, you know, every business out there, because everybody's sort of different in whatever field they're in, obviously size of the company and number of employees, et cetera. But it's fairly simple in terms of my business.
So where were you born?
I was born in Paterson, New Jersey.
What did your parents do?
My father is a retired trooper. He, New Jersey State Trooper. He owns a seal coating business, driveway seal coating business right now. That's what he does on the side. My mother owns an appraisal company, Bonafide Appraisals, and that's what she does. She's owned that company for about 20 or so years now, and she's still working. Both my parents are still technically working.
Yeah, brothers and sisters?
Yes, I have a brother.
What's he up to?
His name is Zach. He's down in Texas. He sells solar panels. He works for a solar company. I think he's a manager for one of the offices. And he's doing pretty well out there. He just moved out there last year and he loves it.
All right. So what were you interested in high school? What kind of subjects did you like?
In high school, I want to say I was really interested in, at the time, And I mean, these things kind of changed very quickly for me. But at the time, I was sort of interested in psychology.
And psychology, and were you into sports?
Yes, I mean, I played football in high school. I wasn't like an all-star player. I just did it because I loved the sport, and you know, I loved the physicality of it. And you know, being able to hang out with my friends and do things and just have something to do after school. But that's pretty much all I did was football, and well, when I was in grade school, I did basketball as well.
And you went to college. You went to a kind of a unique college. What's it called again?
School of Visual Arts in New York City.
And that's a competitive school. A lot of artists go there. I mean, I thought you were going to say you were artistically inclined in high school. I mean, why did you go there? Why did you pick that place?
Oh, well, yes. I mean, yes, I definitely was have been artistically inclined. I get it from my father. He's an amazing artist as well. He's also a tattoo artist. And I mean, I've been drawing since I was 2 years old. And you know what? Just, it's a funny story, but I was rummaging through my attic a few years ago, my mother's attic, and I found a picture that I drew of a motorcycle, and it was dated 1990. So I was about 2 years old. And I have to say, like, I've seen 2 year olds draw, and looking at it, you can tell it's a motorcycle. And on the top right was the name of my school and the address of my school, the college, School of Visual Arts. And it was in my father's handwriting. And I sort of thought that was very odd. So I asked my father about it, and he goes, yeah. And he said that he was trying to actually go to my school, but the tuition was too expensive. And I guess somebody might have just been giving him the information, and he kind of just wrote it down on that piece of paper that I just so happened to draw that motorcycle on. And it's weird. It's kind of weird how I ended up going to that college, you know? So I've always been artistically inclined. I've been doing drawings since I was like 2-3 years old.
School of Visual Arts. It's on 23rd Street in Manhattan, like between what, 2nd and 3rd or 3rd and Lex? Where is it?
Yeah, it's well, there's a few buildings where the classes are held, but the main building is on 23rd, like right by 23rd and Lexington, between Lexington and 3rd on 23rd Street.
Now, going there, like, what did you want to – two things. What did you major in? Like, what was the end game? What did you see yourself being? What did you want to do by going there?
Well, when I first went there, I wanted to major in fine arts. But when I got there, usually the first year is all, like, sort of prerequisite classes before you really hone in on your actual major. And initially I wanted to do fine arts, but there's just something about fine. I mean, it's kind of hard to explain, but if you were in some of my classes where we would get assignments and I would do like these paintings and drawings that took me like hours, I'm talking 100 hours to do. And I would put it up in front of the class and it would get torn apart. But then some person would come with a drawing where it looks like they drew a stick figure on it, probably took them 2 minutes to do, and then they got like A+ on it. So once that started happening, I'm like, yeah, I don't think fine arts is the route for me. So because I can't handle that. So then I ended up going towards graphic design, and initially I wanted to graduate and be a graphic designer. I wanted to do freelance, really, and I did do freelance out when I got out of college because I couldn't find a full-time job right away. And funny thing is, I actually got hired for a full-time job just as I was opening up my business. And then I kind of decided to work for myself and stick with the business instead of working for someone else. But that's initially what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a freelance designer because that's where you make the most money. But obviously, you got to pay your dues. You got to work for companies. And it wasn't very easy. Like I said, I did freelance work, and I designed things for big companies like vitamins for GNC, dog toys, Kleenex boxes, Popsicle. And the thing is, it has to be on the shelves for a year before you could even put it in your portfolio. So it makes it even more difficult for you to actually build a portfolio. It's just a very slow moving process.
Well, wait, who says that? What rule? Who made that rule?
Well, I guess the company that I was working for. And, you know, that's kind of where that whole thing kind of threw me off, because it's like, okay, I'm doing all the hard work, I'm getting paid X amount of money, God only knows what you're charging the client, who's obviously a big time client, because these aren't like small names I'm I'm throwing out here, and I'm getting paid X amount of money, and then you're telling me I gotta wait. It has to be on the shelves for at least a year before I could even put it in my portfolio. Meaning that's at least 2 years before I could even use the work I'm doing. So again, it's just that's again where I kind of went when I told you in the beginning, where it's just so much better to work for yourself, because there isn't people putting limitations on you. So putting limitations on your worth.
I understand. Totally. So going back, though, in fine arts class, you toil for 100 hours and somebody else comes up with a stick figure. Why do you think that is? And is it, I've always wondered, is it, obviously it's a subjective process. Art, evaluating art can be subjective. Does it have something to do with the artist? Like if the artist looks a certain way or whatever, has a certain story, somehow the art is seen through a more sympathetic lens. What would sway the process?
Well, it's very subjective. I mean, for example, you could have the same person, same homework assignment, and have 10 different teachers, and each one of them will have a different grade for you. So it's very subjective, yes. But in terms of what you're saying as far as who the artist was, in my college, that didn't apply because none of us were famous artists. When you're talking in terms of the actual art world, I mean, yes, there are famous artists out there that can literally put like a dot on a canvas and it's worth $50,000 because it's theirs. They're well known. They have a big name. And you'd be surprised that some of these artists that paint, I mean, it's the same thing. Even Michelangelo, it goes back to the Michelangelo times. I mean, Michelangelo didn't paint every painting he did. Da Vinci didn't paint every single painting he did. They had students that worked for them that would do the underlayer coating, that would put the next layer on and do the next layer. And that's sort of, because think about it, if you're an artist and you're selling your paintings for, let's say, $50,000 a pop, you know, it could take you a year to do one painting. So why take a year to do one painting yourself when you can have understudies do most of the work for you? I mean, most artists, all they do is put their signature on it at the bottom. I mean, it's their idea. It's their creation. They're just getting someone else to create it for them in order to be able to pump out more artwork that they can sell.
That doesn't sound right, but I guess
it doesn't sound right, but I get it because if you're a famous artist and that's how much you're getting for paintings, I mean, it makes sense. You make more money that way. That's how they make their money. I get it. And I don't personally agree with it, but then again, I've never been in that situation, so I don't know how I would feel about it if I ever somehow became a famous painter or something, you know. I don't know how I would feel about it then, but again, these are all things that sort of turned me off to the whole fine art world and pushed me more in the direction of doing graphic design.
And graphic design, you mentioned like a Kleenex box and all these other things. You're talking about like the color, the design that's on the box, not the design of the box, right? Graphic design being the imagery that you see, not anything else. It's not 3D what you do.
Some of the stuff I did was 3D, like, because obviously if you're designing, let's say, because there is a certain, you got print design and then you have package design. So if I was doing something that was in terms of package design, then yes, it would be like technically the label's printed, but I would have to present it in a way where it would be superimposed on a bottle.
Yeah. No, I get it. All right. So wait, 23rd Street School of Visual Arts, you are there for how long?
I was there for 4 years. Actually, it took me 5 years to graduate because my last year I took some time off. I moved out of the city and I got an apartment and I was working to, you know, pay my rent and part of my tuition at the time. And I started making pretty good money where I was. And I pretty much stopped. I pretty much just stopped for like a year. And then I went back, did my final credits, and then that was it. I finally graduated after that, but it took me a little bit longer than expected.
What was it like in college? Were you just like, especially a school like that? I mean, was it particularly liberal? Was it impersonal? Was it all one big family? What was it like?
Oh, it was very liberal. Let's just say I didn't really fit in. I didn't have many friends. Well, I had a lot of friends. I was popular. But they were more like acquaintances, people that I knew, people I just hung out with the whole time. I only made really one good friend there, but yes, it was, you can imagine, it was very, very liberal.
All right, so you get out, you're like 23, 24, and that brings you really to starting your own business, right? That's when you started doing what you're doing now?
Yes, yes. That's what ultimately got, because I started my business in 2013. I graduated 2011. So it was just that process of me doing the, like I said, me doing the freelance, those issues that I was running into. And then again, ironically, I was finally offered a full-time job by a company that I actually like when I opened up my business, but then I decided to go the other way. And in a way, in the beginning, I was kind of regretting it because I was struggling the first couple of years, but now I'm so happy I ended up working for myself.
Now, you only have so many hours in the day, and you're on your own. Like, are you thinking next phase here, next step, long term? Like, are you hoping to do something like what you're doing, but do you want to start employing people? Do you want to scale, I guess what they say, is scale this, make it bigger, and I guess therefore more money? I mean, do you have ambition in that regard?
Yes. Let me put it this way. How can I explain this? I love my business. I'd never want to get rid of it. It's never going to go anywhere because it's something that I think can withstand the test of time. But as far as expanding, I'm a little hesitant. And the reason being that I'm hesitant is because, again, I have a few other things that I got going for me that I may want to put a little bit more of my effort into. And, you know, again, like I was telling you before, when you expand a business, and believe me, I spoke to many people that own businesses and they expanded, and some of them are just miserable. I mean, the problems they got to deal with, it's ridiculous. And they tell me, don't do it. Just stick with what you're doing. You're making good money, stress free. So I'm kind of in the middle of that when it comes to my sign business. I kind of like where I'm at now. I'm making good enough money by myself to where I don't really need to add any additional headaches to my life. But I mean, it would be nice. I just, again, I have other things that I may want to pursue.
Okay. Well, let's talk about one of the big ones. What you're doing with watches, you've got something called the Mod Father. That's how I found you on Instagram, or you found me. I don't know what it is, but I've been thinking about watches a lot. Instagram somehow knows that and just starts feeding you things you're intrigued by. Yes. And I spotted your account four months ago, and I'm fascinated by what you've created here. We'll go into that in a second. I want to ask you a quick, well, number one, when did you start doing this? When did you start? And what do you do? How do you characterize it? What do you, when it comes to watches, you are a what?
I like to consider myself a watchmaker. That would be, I think, the correct terminology. And the reason being is because I've been doing watches for about 5-6 years. But as far as building custom watches, I've only been doing it for about a year. So in that sense, yes, I can build a watch, but then I could also repair a watch or refurbish a watch as well. So therefore I would consider myself a watchmaker. I wouldn't want to add the word professional watchmaker because I don't repair watches professionally. I don't, you know, take in someone's broken watch and then repair it. I don't do that. What I do is I would go and just buy beat up old watches, fix them up, finish them up, and then, you know, sell them on eBay, whatever. It's not like I made much money doing it in the beginning. It was very superficial. It was just, it started off as something like, for example, why people do model airplanes. It relaxes them. It's tedious work, but it requires a certain level of patience, and it's also very relaxing, even though it's very tedious work. And that's sort of what it was for me when I started doing the watches. Very tedious work, but at the same time, very relaxing.
You can see this at modfather_watches, modfather, M-O-D, father, as in modification father. Is that where that comes from, right?
Yes. Yeah, it's a play on words. You know, I'm Italian, so it's spicy to say Godfather is one of my favorite movies. So that's kind of a little play on words there.
And these pictures you've taken of the watches, you took them?
Yes.
All right. What is it about watches? What, Drew, you've been doing it, you say, for 5 to 6 years and then making watches for about a year. There are a lot of things you could do that are, why watches?
Well, I've always liked watches. I mean, mainly because my father always liked watches. He always had a watch collection, and I was always going in his cabinet and picking out the ones I wanted when I got older, you know, and I've always had watches even as a little kid. I've always loved them. As I got older, I learned to appreciate them a little bit more for what they are. And it started getting to the point where I was collecting them and I was getting a little obsessed and I was spending money, you know? So what I wanted to do was try to find a way to where I can limit that, like by, you know, by fixing watches, repairing them, making a little bit of money, or buying a watch that I like that maybe doesn't run, and then I could fix it myself and not have to pay someone to fix it. So it was, again, a way to sort of fund my habit and my love for watches in a way. And again, at the same time, it was very therapeutic for me. I think I have a very stressful life. I'm always busy. So again, working on the watches always did that for me. So it was funding my fuel and love for watches. And then at the same time, providing some downtime for myself to relax and wind down.
Over the past 12 years, or maybe it's 15 years, you're 34. You qualify as a millennial. I mean, the Reader's Digest version is that millennials don't wear watches. That they have, they've moved away from the watch because they have the phone and they look at the phone. I guess the Apple Watch has changed that. But first of all, is that true or is that myth or is that a misunderstanding on my part that millennials don't wear watches? And is this like kind of a bit of a throwback in a good way? It's like, you know, I don't know, millennials or whoever else liking cigars or single malt whiskey or something like that. It's like a niche thing that has devout kind of followers and enthusiasts?
Yeah, so millennials, they want to express themselves. So in terms of watches versus watch modding and being able to commission a piece built to the way you want it to be built and look, then I believe that's what appeals to millennials. Now, as far as age range, now you kind of have an age range within that millennial range. And for the most part, like, I've done very little advertising on Instagram, and I could tell you that from starting at the age of 24 to 35 is pretty much where I'm getting most of my business from.
All that stuff makes sense. So I was given an Apple Watch about 3 weeks ago, and I've been playing with it or whatever, and I just decided today that it almost definitely is not for me. And part of it is I see it on so many other wrists. And it doesn't tell me anything about the person, you know, not that I want to necessarily express myself, but I kind of want to find out something about other people. And this just tells me that you're a customer of the biggest company in the world. It doesn't mean anything. And I'll tell you something else. It seems rather flimsy. And I think it just might be a great big kind of, not a scam, but it's just driving you back to the phone. It's somehow... And I don't know. I feel like it's a shell. It doesn't really have all that much capability on its own. There's something kind of chintzy about it that I don't like. I'm very much like before. I think I told you, you know, I'm thinking tentatively about getting a new watch or whatever. And now I know that, and I need to go back to mechanical. This doesn't work for me. It's always, by the way, chiming and doing silly things. And I know you can turn that stuff off, and I've tried, but it continually hoots and chirps and does dopey things. So anyway, I'm over the watch. I really am. Does any of that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Like I said, I've had an Apple Watch. I bought my wife one, and then I figured, let me buy myself one. And yeah, I think I wore it for like a month. and then I got rid of it.
It's something. It looks like kind of like a digital like collar of some kind too. It's not freeing. I don't know what it is. And so you love what you do. Is this one of the things that you'd like to kind of, you know, in 10 years from now, you want to be full time into watches, or is that kind of where you're moving possibly?
Yes. Again, like really what I would love to do is I would love to just expand my brand more than, let's say, being the guy that someone commissions to build them a custom watch. Again, I'll still be that guy. It's just a matter of expanding my brand of watch. And look, I get inspired by certain people like Richard Mill. I mean, if you look at his story and what he did, I mean, it's nothing short of phenomenal. I mean, he owns a company that sells the most expensive watches in the world right now. And he came out of nowhere. Well, I don't want to say came out of nowhere, but he came around in 1999, didn't sell a watch for 2 years. And then all of a sudden he's selling watches that the cheapest one you can get right now is maybe $160,000. And he surpassed companies like Patek, AP, Rolex. I mean, these are companies that have been making watches since the 1800s. And it's very rare for some brand to just come out of nowhere like that and just be making crazy watches that are that much money. I mean, and he makes them custom too. He makes custom ones for famous people, movie stars, etc. But he did it the right way. He was in the field for a while. He got the right connections. And, you know, obviously he had a marketing campaign that was just that's really what put him above the edge. And that's kind of my inspiration. And yeah, I would love to see myself doing it full time. I mean, I hope that one day it can get big enough to where this is the only thing I will be doing. Again, I don't know where that would leave my business. Again, I still love it. Personally, this would be like my ideal situation. My ideal situation would be to have my business to a point where it can pretty much run itself, and then me being able to focus a lot more of my time on the watches. And like I said before, if I want to do that, I'm looking at introducing a lot more headaches into my life. So, I'm kind of on the fence with that. So I just, at this point, I'm just going to see where it takes me. You know, I don't think I'm going to be on the Richard Mill level, but if I can head in that direction, just 5% in that direction, I'll be good.
Well, listen, I mean, I like your watches better than his. I think his are kind of ridiculous. I mean, with the world, you know, the pinball machines and all this nonsense, it's, I mean, the first time I saw it, you could have told me that that watch was $100 and I would have believed you. I mean, it just seemed too, I mean, it just, it's too much. I don't need or want, you know, that kind of show on my wrist. And so, all right, well, what would your brand look like? I mean, because I have seen most of your, I've seen the modifications, the Seiko modifications. Like, what is a, and what would you call it? What is your brand? What is your look? You say you don't want to do custom-made watches for the most part, right? You want to focus on your
brand. No, I
want
to do, no.
You want to do some of those, but I mean, you also want to develop, you know, so you would have to have a kind of a signature look. You'd have to have a starting point, right? And what is that? What is that?
All right,
what does it look like?
So what I would say is this. I don't want it to be set up in this manner. For example, just take, for example, Rolex. They have their lines of watches. You know, they have their Presidents. They have their Oysters and the Datejust. And the, you know, they have their lines, Daytona, et cetera. I don't want to have like a line, because then that doesn't necessarily separate me. I mean, because if you think about it, there are hundreds, thousands of micro brands out there of watches that are very nicely made, you know, nicely made. And for the price point, you can't beat it. And I've seen it. But they'll never get anywhere. And it's sad because there's just so many micro brands out there. And they have, they have these lines of watches where this is the, I don't know, I'm just throwing out a word, but I'm saying this is the Shark 1 line. This is the Shark 3 line. I don't want that. I want unique custom-made pieces that when someone commissions me to make it for them, there's never going to be another one made. It's the same concept as Richard Mille. Again, he'll have a line of watches. He, let's say he makes 28 of them. That's it. He doesn't make them again. And then he moves on to the next one. And then again, when let's say a big famous movie star commissions him to build him one and pays $1.5 million, that's the only one that's ever going to be made.
Right.
For that person.
But I mean, it still has a certain look. I mean, they're rectangular, they're transparent, right? For the most part.
I mean, I'm not trying to stick to a specific case style. There are many different types of case styles. What I would love to do, which I can't really do right now because I've been doing the research, but it's going to take some time, is eventually I would like to start designing some of my own cases. And something along the lines of a crown at 3 case with a different type of lug. I like round watches, but I really want to do something that, again, because like I told you before, when I started with watches, I started getting old watches, fixing them, repairing them. And along those lines, I became very hooked on vintage military watches, World War I, World War II, and just vintage watches in general. So I want to bring a little bit of the vintage into it. Like if you ever seen like that retro. So if you ever seen, let's say, a Hamilton Ventura, which is what Elvis wore, like the shape of that watch. I mean, that's a cool shape. I mean, it's not something I would wear, but I can't think in terms of what appeals to me. I sort of have to think in terms of what would appeal to the public. So as of right now, I don't want to say I have a set, like a set image of what it's going to be. I'm still in the process of, because again, it's very time consuming. You have to do the 3D design work, which I'm learning the program, but it's got a little bit of a learning curve, and I just don't trust anybody else to do the work for me. I need to do the work myself. I mean, I could very easily pay someone to do it, but I just want it to come from me. Again, as an artist, like we said, famous painters getting other people to paint their paintings for them, I'm not that guy. I need to do it myself. So if you were to look at, let's say, I guess a Rolex Submariner case, I mean, you look at that case, it's a classic design. It's been copied over and over and over again through many different brands, big brands, little brands, micro brands. It's just an iconic case. So I'm trying to find something along those lines. But again, I just don't want to stick to one design. I would like to have different types. But as of right now, since you're asking me this question, as of right now, most of the cases, I mean, again, there's maybe about 8 to 10 different cases that I use. And they vary in shape, size. I think the best answer I could give is just, you know, sort of check out my Instagram page, because there's many. There are some that are based off of existing watches, such as the Panerai, the Rolex, the Mariner, the Seiko SKX, Seiko Turtle case. There are a few cases that they make that are just totally different, like the SKX Crown at 3 case, which I like to use that case a lot because it's the only one that looks so different than something that already exists.
What's it called?
It's called the SKX Crown at 3 case, because the standard Seiko SKX has the crown at the 4 position. So it's the same case, except they move the crown and the crown guards at the 3 o'clock position. And like I said, it's the only thing that I see that looks different than what already exists.
Well, I'm looking at it now. It is very cool. And you know what else is cool is this Hamilton Ventura, which I've never seen before, although I guess I have somewhere. As soon as you said Ventura, I had an idea of what it would look like just by the that funky name. But man, that is a great, great watch. So, all right, wait, do you have a website? Because Modfather, you know, I don't know how many watches you actually have up there, maybe 50 or so. Do you have a website?
Not yet. I'm in the middle of designing it. I didn't want to do like your standard Wix you know, website. But now that I'm starting to gain traction, I want to build a website. But the reason why I'm just lagging on it a little bit is because I want my website to just be dedicated to my watches, and not Seiko modding. So I'm in that point where I want to do it, but I want to just wait a little bit longer till I can get more material for it. You know, I don't want to just start a website that's going to have one page on it right now.
Hey, by the way, where do you get these parts? I mean, where you're mailing, obviously, off the internet, but where are they made, and where do you actually do the work? You don't do them at the sign shop, do you?
No, I have like a little area in my basement that I cordoned off. I finished my basement a couple years ago, so then I made one end of the basement my watch, I guess, repair shop down there. And that's where I do them. As far as the parts go, unfortunately, all these parts come from China. They are quality made. I mean, there are a lot on the market right now, but a lot of them are just, again, they all come from China, but you could definitely tell the difference in quality control between the parts that I use compared to some of the parts that you can find on like eBay and Amazon and stuff like that. There's just, they're much more expensive. There's much more quality control that goes into them. The waterproof rating of them and everything. But yeah, and I get them from sites that sell them, such as like Namokey, Crystal Times. There are some companies that are based in the USA, but still the parts are coming from manufacturers in China. I mean, unfortunately, that's just the way it is these days,
now,
as you know.
Right. So when people look at your site, like what are they supposed to do? I mean, like what do you want them to do? Do you want them to contact you and say, hey, I really like this watch, I want this watch? Or do you want to start a conversation and you want to create a unique watch for them? Do you want them to send you a watch that you can modify in some way? Like, what is it specifically? Because I just want to go here. Seiko mods and customization, ground up mods with personal logo. Oh, very cool. You can put your own personal logo on the watch. So that's what they are. Some don't say Seiko. Some have other little, those are personal emblems for somebody.
Yes. Yeah. So I could do personalized watches such as those with their name. And I've done it for like, let's say people that own businesses, you know, and they want to give gifts to like their employees. Or I've done another guy who had them made for his family. They have a family reunion every year and he wanted to give one to all his brothers. So I do those as well. And yeah, there's some that have someone's personalization or their brand or logo on it, which I'm totally cool with. You'll see some with my branding on it, which is the M inside of the circle. That would be because some people prefer my brand. But for the most part, what I do want is exactly that. Like, I want someone to say, hey, listen, I want you to build me a custom piece. I mean, granted, a lot of the work I do is people messaging me about watches I already made and they love that watch and they want me to make it again, which, again, from an artist standpoint, it's very boring. I don't really like doing it. I always try to talk them into me. Like, I'll say, listen, for my own sanity, you got to let me change something on it just so it's not it's just not the same. And I said, and I always, the way to sell them on that is by saying, hey, listen, do you want a watch that, you know, somebody already has, or do you want a watch that, you know, no one else has but you? And usually that breaks the ice right there. But for the most part, that's what I want. I want someone to say, hey, Angelo, I want to commission you to build me a custom piece. And listen, the more crazier the watch is, the better.
All right. Don't you run the risk, though? Don't you run the risk, though, of somebody, you know, like rolling the dice and they may not like it? I mean, like, it's like with anything else. I mean, if you're ordering something and leaving it up to you or whoever's making it, I mean, I know they're giving you some sort of guidance, I would imagine, but
yes,
that's kind of an inherent risk in this, right? And does it ever, you know, is it like, uh-oh, that's not really what I want? Does that happen?
Rarely. The way I see it is there's two different types of people. There are some people that will look at my page and they love what I'm already doing, and they'll just leave it up to me to do whatever I want. And that's what I love, because then that brings out the artist in me. I also like a little bit of direction. I like someone to give me a challenge. I like someone who says, hey, this is what I want, and I need it to be like this. And, of course, I go through whatever steps I got to do, such as mock-ups, examples. I do stock a certain amount of parts, so I could always swap around parts for them. And, hey, what do you think? I mean, there's a lot of people who do modding, but they're like – I mean, they're so mundane about it, like where they're just saying, like, hey – show me all the parts you want and I'll put it together. And then it's just them going on the websites and ordering all the parts. Whereas, and then once it gets put together, if you don't like it, you don't like it. If you want a different part, you got to pay. So I try to stock, let's say, handsets, bezel inserts, chapter rings. There's certain things I don't stock, like, you know, cases and dials, because it can be quite expensive to stock that stuff. But for the most part, I'm pretty flexible on that. And that helps eliminate those issues that you speak of. But again, there always is, you know, with any business, if I show you something and you give me the stamp of approval and you want to change it later, then hey, that's on you. You know, if I don't do something right, that's not exactly the way you want it, then I don't have a problem changing it. But again, I don't think I've ever even run into that problem as of today. So I have not run into that problem.
What about this? How long have you been using Modfather?
It's been a year. I just created it last September.
Now, one question about that is, all right, it's great, it's cool, but I mean, in the name you've given your company, it is modification. That's what you specialize in. That's what it is, right? M stands for Modfather, mod being modification. Does that look, every logo, every has initial story, and it doesn't have to be the be all and the end all, but, or tell the entire future of the company, but that does not explain, or that does not cover what it is you really want to do. Fair?
Yes. So, and you're right, because again, from when I started it compared to where I am now today, obviously I just told you like what I'm inspired to do with it. And again, I haven't officially made an LLC yet. I mean, I'm still kind of umbrella, putting everything of the umbrella of my sign company at the moment. But when I do create this LLC, which I am soon, it's going to be under Modfather Watches, but I'm going to basically step away from the whole, because again, the name is catchy. I get a lot of people who message me because they like my name. It's catchy. And you know, and I'm on a few websites listed as like a modder. But eventually I'm going to have to kind of slowly move away from that. And that's where, when it goes back to me saying where I just want to focus more on my brand and my custom watches. And again, just like going back to Richard Mill, the name of his watches is his name. Granted, I don't have a really cool name like Richard Mill. It's Angelo Armanio. That would be the most boring watch in the world. I'm going to buy an Angelo Armanio, you know?
Wait a second. That's, you sound like Giorgio Armani in 1965 saying he has a bad name. This is a cool, pretty cool name.
You think so?
Totally, know. Totally.
Oh my God, my name gets butchered so much. Since I was in school, they butcher my name, misspell it.
Only the elite will understand it. I don't know. Look, I'm going to offer my only critique, all right? My only, and I feel like it's my duty, and forgive me, the only thing that doesn't concern is too strong a word, but Modfather with the Godfather kind of, you know, marionette thing with, you know, it's borrowing obviously very heavily from the Godfather. I mean, and it's supposed to. We're supposed to know that, you know. Does it suggest, however, that, you know, you're doing mobster watches, that you're doing, you know, is there too much of that? Because, you know, that evokes a lot of stuff that has nothing to do with watches. And I don't know. Have you thought about that? Am I a jerk to bring it up?
I mean, I that has crossed my mind. I don't think it's more or less about like necessarily me making mobster watches. But I think that just, I don't know. Again, if I'm going to try to build my own unique brand, it's not something that I want to affiliate with, let's say, a movie. Because then it sort of cheapens it.
Exactly.
You know, I can't say, hey, pay me $2,000 to build you a custom watch. you know, because again, I mean, there are watches that I build for people that are quite expensive. And, you know, these are watches that are, I mean, they're made from like solid sapphire. Like I'm getting a case made right now that's made out of solid sapphire. And they're expensive. They range like in the $3,000, $4,000 range. And if I want to kind of demand that higher quality of watch building, then you're right. I got to step away. Cause again, I never knew that I never dreamed that this would go in the direction that it's going to right now. And I'm getting contacted by companies like jewelers. I do dabble a little bit in the luxury watch trading business, not like crazy, but I dabble in it. And I've been getting contacted by big jewelers that want to put my watches in their showcase, or they want to feature me on their website. And I'm getting a lot of recognition now that I never thought from, you know, if you take me back to September last year, I wouldn't think I would be where I am right now with this. So it started out as like a funny gimmick, the Modfather. And it was funny how I thought of the name. I was just sitting down with my dad. I'm like, got to think of a name. And I don't know, the Godfather was on TV, just so happened to be on TV. And I'm like, the Modfather. I'm like, that's it, the Modfather. So it started out as a gimmick, you know, and I didn't think it was going to take me to where I am today. So,
well, did you think that took you? I mean, I know people like the name, but did the name take you? Or, I mean, I think your creations really took you. I mean, this could have, look.
Definitely wasn't the name.
It wasn't the name. Obviously, it wasn't the name. And you're going to go to the next level, it seems like to me. You're fast on your way. Look, pretty soon, quite frankly, Columbia Pictures is going to say, you know, you're copying our name, you're copying our logo. The Puzo family could give you a hard time. They're always making noise about this stuff. Before you get much bigger, it's something you may want to think about. I mean, the other thing is, and I'm the only person who has this issue probably, but I know somebody on Instagram, they go by the Mon Father. I don't know what the hell Mon means or whatever. It's this nice girl who works where I work, and it's the Mon Father, and it's like her personal brand. And so it's every time I see it, I'm confused with that one, but that's just my issue. Anyway, I feel like it's too movie. There's too much of the movie there. And because this stuff is gold or sapphire. And yes. They're amazing. They really are. Well, hey, let me just ask you a few more questions if you don't mind.
Sure.
How old are your kids?
My daughter is 3. My son is 2.
And you got more on the way? You're thinking about, you want to have a bigger family or what?
No.
Okay. What does your wife do?
My wife, she works, she is a manager in a human resources department for a produce supply manufacturing. Or they supply produce to like places like, you know, BJ's and Costco. And she is the manager in the human resources department.
And you said The Godfather's your favorite movie. Let me ask you this. Are you a person? Your father is a tattoo artist. Do you have tattoos?
Yes, sir. I do a lot.
And does he still do that?
Yes, he still does tattoos.
What is it about tattoos? I mean, they just taken off. I mean, it used to be sailors and, you know, that's about it. Now, you know, 20 something girls, everybody has them. What's going on there?
Well, again, I think it goes back to what I was explaining to you earlier about the millennials wanting to express themselves. This level of expression is exploding right now, especially among the younger generations. I mean, I know I'm 34, but see, I think even though I am considered a millennial, I still believe I'm on that borderline. Like I was born in 88. So I think if you could maybe push it to like 92, so anyone born after 92 is like that type of person. Whereas I'm more of a, because of the age I am, I'm a little bit more old school. And again, it's all about expression, and it's just another way to express yourself. Same thing with piercings, you know, dyeing your hair green, crazy stuff like that.
Yeah. But, well, I don't want to, like, the one thing about those folks who are doing that, unlike you, I mean, you're expressing yourself. This is hard work. This takes real skill, what you're doing. I mean, this is, and from your other job to this, there's expertise and mastery involved. Anybody can get a tattoo. And I feel like there's so much with, I guess it's Generation Y or Generation Z. They're just kind of, they're expressing themselves, but they're not, I don't know. It's almost like they're thinking more of their marketing of themselves than what it is they're marketing. You know, they're not developing. People who do that, not you, but some, I feel like it's all about, the label and not the substance, not or the brand and not what you were putting the brand on. Does that make sense? I don't know.
Yes. No, it does, because you look at some people's tattoos and they literally make no sense. See, me, yeah, my tattoos are expressions of myself. So every tattoo that I have, although I may have many, every single one of them has some sort of meaning to me. So it's not like, oh, I'm going to get a picture of an octopus on my back, like some, you know, like, or a koi fish. Like some people, oh, I want to get a koi fish. Like, do you even know what a koi fish means? Do you know what it represents before you put it on your body permanently? No, they don't care. They just think, oh, this looks cool. I'm going to put it on my body. But that's not me. If you looked at every single one of my tattoos, I can give you a reason as to why I got it and what it means.
What is there a big break you're looking for? Is there like, I think you mentioned, gosh, if you can get your watch in front of a celebrity, like what celebrity would that be? And are you even ready for it now? Do you need to like kind of, is there more work you have to be doing until that happens? Or are you looking for something to happen like right away?
I definitely think I need more work, because so, I mean, all right, so I'll put it this way. The one celebrity, there's two celebrities right now that if you can get to wear your watch, I mean, it's like beyond game changer. I will literally go from the Modfather to like literally the Godfather of watches in one night. It would be John Mayer. He's really big into watches, and Stallone. Sylvester Stallone, and he's had a few pieces commissioned by Richard Mille. So the thing with Richard Mille is, again, he had these designs in mind. He designed these watches. They're built out of like crazy materials that are unknown really to be used in watchmaking. But he has an engineer, and he had the backing of AP as well. So he had the backing of a really large luxury watch company. And he also had an engineer who was pretty much designing and getting these watches made for him. It's not like he was sitting there making them himself. So me and my, for me, for example, can I design something like that? 100%. I'm artistic enough to where I have these ideas in my head. But my problem is how do I bring them to life? How could I make them? How can I get them produced? Who could make them for me? Obviously, I need someone. I'm not going to go to a factory in China. I mean, I'm going to have to get some company in Switzerland like to make these watches, because if I am going to present something to, let's say, someone like Stallone or John Mayer, you know, I can't give them a modified Seiko. You know, they're not going to wear something like that. And I still think that in a way I have to get my name a little bit bigger as well before I could even do that. I mean, I could be wrong about that aspect, because, you know, I know people, artists, for example, that they got famous for their artwork because they would do paintings of famous celebrities and they would present them to the celebrities and they would take pictures with them. And next thing you know, their paintings are selling for $50,000, $100,000, all because they did a painting for, let's say, because again, Stallone's a big art guy as well. He buys art a lot. So, and he has a picture of him and Stallone in the painting. And next thing you know, he's getting $50,000 to $100,000 for his paintings, which he was maybe getting $1,000 for prior. So,
well,
I don't know.
I mean, they might.
It's
you
a
know,
very fine line to how that happens. I have an idea of how I'm going to go about it. But again, I'd rather, obviously, for my own sake, I would love to get this done sooner rather than later. There's no reason in dragging your feet with it. But if I don't do it at the right time, then I could lose the opportunity. Or B, I would just have to literally keep trying over and over again. But this could get quite expensive. So I kind of don't want to go that route.
Sure. I mean, but some of these watches, by the way, like you can't find these, you know, you said, okay, they're modified Seikos. Would they wear that? But, you know, you can't really find these watches anywhere. Like, I like this look. There's also, have you ever seen Wildman? Is that the guy who modifies Rolex?
Yes.
I mean, when I first happened upon that, I thought they were real Rolexes. And I was disappointed to find out that they weren't. Like, you can't find watches like that. No one's modifying like you guys. I mean, I may be wrong, but I mean, I have not seen those kinds of watches anywhere else, or at least a couple of designs of yours. I'm like, I want that one, and I don't think it exists anywhere else. I mean, I guess I don't know the watch world as well as I should. They probably exist somewhere, but I don't know. Well, they look pretty unique to me.
Well, I can tell you this. The reason why, you're right, though. You're not going to find my watches anywhere else unless someone's trying to copy them, because the thing with that is again, you buy the parts from these sites, right? And yeah, again, I can buy, let's say, these parts, this part, that part, put it together here, boom, you have a watch, right? But anybody who sees a picture of that watch can now say, oh, I know what this is. I know what that part is. I'll just go to the site, buy these exact parts, and build the exact same watch, which can happen and does happen all the time. But what I do is I got to do my own personal touch to it. I do a lot of hand painting work. I do a lot of custom dials. I always have to do something to it other than the way it would come from the factory. So this way, when someone looks at it, I get it all the time. People constantly message me and ask me, where did you get those hands? Where did you get that dial? Where did you get that bezel insert? And I'm just like, from me, that's where I got it. You know what I mean? So, again, as an artist, I have to put my own personal touch to it, which is why I think that my watches are really starting to take off compared to if I was just somebody buying parts from a site and putting the parts together.
All right. We already went through your hopes and dreams, and sounds like you're on your way, very much so. And, dude, I really appreciate talking to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Greg. I really appreciate you having me on your podcast.
Nice guy, right? I wish I could do that. It's kind of interesting that you said some building models, building watches is tedious but relaxing. I never thought of it that way, but yeah, it is tedious. Like, I love making model planes. Granted, I haven't made one in it's been at least 3 months. but it's cool. I need to get a couple of hobbies going like that. Something that has nothing to do with anything. So, Angelo, thank you. Check out modfather_watches on Instagram, and I'll see you on the Newsmax show, 10 p.m. Yeah, what do you think? I actually like it. It's better for my schedule. 10 p.m. Eastern, and you can figure out the rest, although I think most of our audience tends to be on the East Coast. All right, I got to go. I'll see you later. Thank you.